It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Smith back to throw. Has time over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up. Deep ball down the middle of the field.
He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up. Gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again. Trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right. Needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 97 yards.
Now, here's your host, John Schmell.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Also on Twitter, you can send in your questions and comments to hashtag Giants Chat. Today we're talking some NFL draft, so send in those questions and comments on Twitter, and I will ask them to our guest today. That is our draft expert, Rob Rang from CBS Sports, also the self-proclaimed coolest guy covering the NFL draft. Rob, good morning. Hey.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Rob, hope all is well. This is your busy time of year. Before we get into the specifics around where the Giants are picking, anything you're hearing recently about where you think some teams might be going early on in this draft or any trends that we're seeing in terms of guys moving up or down boards?
Well, I think the biggest thing is we've seen that there are going to be a number of clubs who are going to be prioritizing the offensive tackle group. And this is a spectacular draft to do such. I mean, you got Luke Jokel from Texas A&M, I still believe is the odds-on favorite to go number one overall to the Kansas City Chiefs, but it's going to be a race down to the wire. Central Michigan's Eric Fisher was the more impressive player during workouts. He certainly impressed scouts during the Senior Bowl performance that he had, because that was the big question, is what type of competition had he faced against the MAC. But at the same time, he was spectacular there. And, oh, by the way, Lane Johnson from Oklahoma is a better athlete than either one of them. So I think that one of the big things that we're going to be following as the draft approaches is there going to be a club who's going to be willing to trade up into the top 10, maybe a Miami Dolphins, for example, who are going to try and trade up and grab one of those left tackles.
Well, and you're right. For the first time, you're seeing people saying that there might be six offensive linemen gone in the first 20 picks. And let's stay on this. Let's jump to where the Giants pick at 19. Do you think any of those top five linemen, I'm talking about Cooper and Womack at guard, and then, of course, Jokel, Fisher and Johnson at tackle, will any of those guys be around when the Giants choose at 19? And if not, will DJ Fluker out of Alabama be there?
You know, that's the big debate. I think if it's going to be among those five players, you mentioned the three left tackles, Jokel, Fisher, obviously Jones from Oklahoma, and then the two guards, Womack and Cooper. I really think the most likely of the five to be available to the Giants at 19 would be Chance Womack, and he was arguably the most dominant of the five, but at the same time, he's also the shortest of the five. He is a guy that hasn't necessarily stunned people with his workouts and with his work ethic leading up to the draft, and the farther we get away from that dominating performance in the national title game against Notre Dame, then the more teams get an opportunity to fixate on all the other silly stuff like workouts and things of that nature. So I do believe there's a possibility that he starts to slide down the board a little bit. Obviously, he is among the better players in this draft, and that's the philosophy the Giants have followed throughout the Tom Coughlin and Jerry Reese era. At the same time, DJ Fluker from Alabama is another dominating player on the field who wasn't quite as impressive during workouts as people had hoped. He wasn't able to perform at the Senior Bowl due to his recovery from a shoulder issue suffered during Alabama's title run. So he is another player that makes a great deal of sense to me, especially considering the Giants' at least perceived lack of depth at the offensive tackle position.
Well, you mentioned Fluker. Now, most people project him as a right tackle, simply too big, not enough foot speed to play on the left side. But with the way the NFL works now with these 3-4 rushing outside linebackers, quicker, smaller defensive ends, is Fluker going to struggle even at right tackle dealing with some of these faster pass rushers at the NFL level?
No, I think that's a great point. I think that he will struggle at times. That's something that he certainly struggled with at times while at Alabama. But at the same time, he is such a dominant run blocker that as long as you are a franchise that believes in the power running game, then you're going to be just fine with it. And you're going to be willing to give up an occasional pressure off of the right tackle position just because of the fact that he is consistently going to be knocking his opponent to the ground, clearing ways for a dominant rushing attack.
And you do think Fluker will more than likely be there when the Giants pick at 19?
I think that's a little bit of a toss-up because there are some clubs out there. If we see the tackle start to go early, the Miami Dolphins, to me, are a big team in this whole mix. They're the number 11. Number 12. They're a club that had a desperate need for offensive tackle help. Jonathan Martin is a player they drafted a year ago to potentially replace Jake Long, obviously the former number one overall pick. They have to replace Jake Long now, who obviously signed with the St. Louis Rams. Jonathan Martin is a guy who played left tackle throughout his career at Stanford, played very well, actually, as a right tackle with Miami this past season, and now they're talking about moving him over to left tackle. Well, the concern that people had with him in college, as well as during his rookie season, is that he also, like we talked about with DJ Fluker, also struggled with speed. And so if you're going to make him a left tackle, then you better have somebody who's going to be a strong right tackle to complement him. And I personally think that the Dolphins might be better off trying to find an elite left tackle. They have an exciting young quarterback in Ryan Tannehill who is mobile enough to be able to escape some pressure. But as you guys well know, if you have an elite quarterback, you better be able to protect him. Otherwise, what's the point in the investment in the first place?
Yeah, no question about it. And let's stick on quarterback for a second. Where do you think and when do you think the first quarterback in this draft is going to go?
Well, that's the million-dollar question.
Yes, it is.
I've been having Geno Smith go slotted to the Philadelphia Eagles, number 4 overall, for a month or so now. And the reason I say that is just because of the fact that, obviously, with new head coach with Philadelphia, former Oregon Ducks head coach Chip Kelly, you know that there's going to be a shakeup. At the quarterback position, he has spectacular athlete Michael Vick, a guy who is very well suited to play in Chip Kelly's offense, at least the style of offense that we saw Kelly use while at Oregon. So I think that's a win for you. But at the same time, Vic has never shown the ability to stay healthy throughout an entire season. Nick Foles, the primary backup, certainly is not a fit in Chip Kelly's traditional offense. Dennis Dixon was signed, former Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback, but he has never shown the consistent awareness or accuracy down the field to be successful in the NFL. So I see Geno Smith from West Virginia as the top quarterback in this draft class. He's not an elite talent. He has the physical traits you're looking for. He really struggled with anticipation, awareness, and accuracy when he was forced to move his feet. And so therefore, I think that he is a player who needs some time to develop. If he is put into a system like in Philadelphia, where you have a known offensive guru like Chip Kelly, as well as a quality starter in front of him, he would be given that opportunity. I think that the Eagles could come out winning on that deal if they indeed decide to go with the quarterback number 4.
All right, let's jump back to the Giants at 19. And where do you think, besides offensive line, we've talked about that, the Giants might find the best value, the most talented player, that most coveted best player available when they go at 19? I know this draft is filled with uncertainty, but where do you think this draft is deep enough where the Giants will get that value at 19 if they do not go for the offensive line?
Well, if Chance Warmack isn't available or a DJ Fluker, we talked about them as being players that the Giants might love to see at that spot. If not, I think there's going to be a variety of defensive players that make a great deal of sense. Now, obviously, the Giants have some spectacular talent already in the field on the defensive side of the ball. But, that's something that Tom Coughlin and Jerry Reese have certainly been willing to do in the past, is to stick with their board, take the best player available. And I think that there's a good chance that it might be one of those defensive linemen. Tank Carradine, for me, is a guy from Florida State who, if he had not been injured, and he did, he suffered a torn ACL on November 24th, that is going to require a little bit of time. But at the same time, just knowing the way the Giants have gone after pass rushers in the past, to me, he makes some sense as a developmental prospect who could come in and prove himself to be every bit worthy of a top 10 pick. So at number 19 overall, that certainly would make a great deal of sense.
Wow.
At linebacker, I know there's a lot of talk out there, and Manti Te'o and guys like that. I just don't think that gives you enough value. And so while I certainly acknowledge the possibility of some need at the linebacker position, to me, if you're going to go with a pure athlete, you might as well roll the dice with a great athlete like Alec Ogletree from Georgia, but you've got to be really confident about the off-field concerns. And so I think what's all said and done, the most likely scenario, given the lack of depth, or so-called lack of depth, in New York Giants secondary, would be for a cornerback, just considering the teams that make the pass the football the way that they do in the higher levels of the NFC, or safety. There are some spectacular safeties in this year's draft class. It's been characterized by some that this is a class that lacks talent. That's not fair. It certainly lacks in talent at quarterback and at running back. But at the same time, in the secondary, as well as the offensive and defensive lines, this is the strongest of the draft as we've seen in years. And I think there's going to be a number of clubs who are going to be able to capitalize that right about what the Giants are, number 19 overall, all the way to the 20s, 30s, and early 40s. Those are better picks in terms of value than selecting the top 10 this year.
I want to go position by position here. We're joined by Rob Rang, draft expert for CBS Sports. You can send in your question to comments them to hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Rob, let's start the defensive line. I've seen a couple guys. You mentioned Tank Carradine, who obviously is a very big upside guy. Other guys I've seen mentioned around 19 in this draft, the Werner kid out of Florida State, the defensive end. Of course, you have Sylvester Williams out of North Carolina, Sheldon Richardson. Also, as well, a lot of people are predicting going around 19. How do you break it down among those four players as potential targets for the New York Giants?
Well, of the four, when healthy, Carradine was the best player this past season. Sheldon Richardson is a player that was a spectacular player this past year. He didn't do much of anything a couple of years before that. He bounced around a little bit in junior college. Came in as a very highly touted player, but again, bounced around a bit and wasn't able to do much until this past season, but he was dominant in big games. He actually finished second overall in his entire team in tackles from the defensive tackle position. That's incredibly rare. So he not only does he have burst, he has power, and he played very hard. Now, of course, those are traits that everybody is looking for. Sylvester Williams is a guy who hasn't played a lot of football. He actually started football late in his high school career and really turned it on the second half of the season. And so people are high and low on him. There's one rationale that says that, hey, this is a guy who has a great deal of upside. He certainly possesses all the athletic ability you're looking for. Other people question how much he's motivated by dollar signs. And so, he's a polarizing player. I know some teams who believe he's a top 15 pick and could go as high. I personally have him rated more in the 40s or 50s just because of the fact that, you know, I think I'm a little worried about what's going to happen once he signs that big-time contract. And Bjorn Werner, to me, is the safest of all four players because he has consistently improved throughout his career at Florida State. Now, he's a German native, and he is a guy that also hasn't played a lot of football, but he is incredibly technically sound for a guy who doesn't have a great deal of experience. The problem is that he's a little stiff in the hips, and so he has a good burst up field, but he doesn't flatten out very well. And so while he has impressive production, frankly, he didn't make as many plays as Tank Carradine did on the other side. And so he is a guy I think could warrant consideration with the Giants, certainly wants consideration in the first round. I would expect all these players to wind up going in the first round. I just believe with the Giants specifically, they have traditionally gone for the dominant athletic traits. Of the four players we just mentioned, the least athletic in terms of just pure athletic traits is Bjorn Werner, and that's why I think that while he could come in and be a quality player, I don't know that he necessarily is making the Giants an elite team, and of course that's the goal.
Interesting. All right, how about the linebackers? You mentioned Ogletree is a guy that is the best athlete of the guys that could go in the first round. The other two, generally, that could be round of 19, you have Manti Te'o. People are talking about him. You have the Minter kid out of LSU. Or do you think a guy like Jarvis Jones, I know people have a lot of red flags on him, could he drop as far as 19 for the Giants?
I think Jarvis Jones could drop, and it would be a colossal mistake by a number of clubs if he did so. I mean, everybody wants to talk about the fact that he had a 4.90 at his 40-yard dash, and all these different red flags, the spinal stenosis and all these things. You know, to me, the numbers that matter with Jarvis Jones, the fact that he had 24.5 tackles for loss, 14.5 sacks, and 7 forced fumbles, against SEC competition that led the country in all three traits. I mean, that's a Triple Crown Award winner in baseball. You know, I mean, an absolutely dominant defensive player against elite competition. He has a nice burst up field. He has heavy hands. He locates the football well. He plays hard. To me, he is a traditional 3-4 rush linebacker who is going to be an absolute star in the NFL and do it early in his career. So,
wow.
Personally, I would be surprised to see him get past the Pittsburgh Steelers, who just love players like this, who are, of course, drafting just a couple of picks ahead of the Giants, I believe, at number 17 overall. But at the same time, you know, there's always a possibility that he slips by because, obviously, the medical concerns are out there. You know, Alec Ogletree, his teammate, is a spectacular athlete, but he's got some concerns on and off the field. My biggest concern about him on the field is that he's a bit of a lunge tackler. He can make some dynamic hits, but at the same time, he leaves his feet too often. That results in him, again, lunging, and some of his would-be tackles or ball carriers falling off of his would-be tackles. And so that's some concern that way. He does have the ability to rush the passer, which anytime you're looking at a linebacker in the first round, I think that they not only have to be able to drop down into coverage a little bit, but they also have to rush the passer. That's something that he does have, as opposed to, say, Manti Te'o or Kevin Minster, two very, very good football players. I just don't think that either one of them has the straight line speed or the coverage ability that you're looking for in a first-round player. Manti Te'o had an incredibly productive senior campaign. He had 7 interceptions, and so he's a guy that I think really, in terms of numbers, he has the ability and coverage that you're looking for. But at the same time, prior to this season, he had 0 career interceptions, and that's the biggest concern I have about him, is that in an increasingly pass-happy NFL, is he a player who's going to prove himself quickly to be just a first and second down run defender?
And that's the same trap that McClain fell into when he got drafted by the Raiders, really just more of a run defender than he is a guy that can defend the pass. We've got a tweet question coming in from Marcus Erickson. Rob, we're joined by Rob Rang, draft analyst for CBS Sports. He wants to know about the corners in this draft. D. Milner, obviously, is the consensus number one guy. He's probably going to go in the top 10. But after him, how do you see those other cornerbacks, the guys like Trufant, the guys like DJ Hayden, how do you see them in terms of their early NFL production, and where do you think their talent value predicts where they're going to go in that first round?
Well, as you said, D. Milner is in a class all by himself. I think when it's all said and done, I can't imagine him slipping by the Cleveland Browns at number 6 overall, unless there is some type of monster trade up by another club, trying to get probably one of those offensive tackles that we talked about earlier. At the same time, once you get past D. Milner, there is a little bit of a drop-off. But what's exciting to me is there are 5 or 6 cornerbacks who you can kind of jumble up their names in a hat, and depending on the club, they might say this is the number 2 corner, this is the number 3 corner, or whatever. Everybody has a different opinion on who number 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 are. To me, Desmond Trufant from Washington is a 4-year starter who's a guy that played at a high level in a pass-happy conference, and then all he did was follow that up with a dominant showing at the Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama. I've been fortunate enough to go to that Senior Bowl All-Star game for the last 10 years or so, and he was spectacular. He was clearly the top cornerback in Mobile this last year, just like his brother Marcus Trufant was, of course, the former first-round pick in Seattle Seahawks years ago, just like he had done in Mobile all those years ago while I was a member of the Washington State Cougars. Jamar Taylor is another guy who is a 4-year starter at Boise State, a guy who's highly productive. And just because of the fact that he plays way out in Idaho, a lot of people seem to be a little late on him. But he was very impressive as well in Mobile. Like Trufant, ran very, very well at the combine, alleviated any concerns that anybody may have had about his speed. I think both those players most likely go anywhere between, say, the Giants and 19 or the late portion of the first round, but certainly first-round caliber players. Xavier Rhodes from Florida State. If everybody is jumping on the bandwagon to see how Seahawks, big, long corners, and no one's going to pay off better for himself in that regard than Rhodes, 6'2", 210 pounds. He has the length that teams are looking for. He's a guy who also ran very, very well. My biggest concern with him is that he is a little bit inconsistent as a tackler. At times, he's the most dominant defensive player on the field for Florida State. And as we talked about with some of the other talented players they have, that's saying something. But other times he just was he was a little bit more willing just to kind of duck his head and roll the shoulder, and I want to see a little bit more consistency in that regard. David Amerson is exactly the same way, another ACC player at North Carolina State, has the best ball skills of any of the cornerbacks in this draft, in my opinion. He had 18 career interceptions, and he left as a junior, which led the entire country in terms of career interceptions. So 6'1", 205 pounds, ran a 4.3s. He just doesn't play quite that fast. If you watch the tape, including the very first game this past season, he got torched by Cordarrelle Patterson in Tennessee. And so he is a player that, in my opinion, is a little bit overrated, but he certainly has the size and the ball skills to get scouts excited. So you know, that's a quick thumbnail sketch of some of the cornerbacks I really like. Oh, you mentioned DJ Hayden. Hayden is a spectacular player. At the same time, I just don't know that a team, because of the medical concerns that he had, where he suffered a horrible, I mean, very frightening injury, where he's literally on the operating table fighting for his life after emergency heart surgery. There was a vein torn in his heart during a freak hit during practice. Because of those concerns, I know that NFL teams have cleared him medically. At the same time, I just have a hard time believing that some team's going to roll the dice on that type of a medical question in the first round. I think he's going to wind up being a steal in the second round, though.
All right, I'm going to hit two more positions real quick, Rob, before we say goodbye. First is safety. Kenny Vaccaro is a guy that is pretty much the top safety by most people's analysis in this draft. My question for you is, is he on a complete tier all by himself? Because everyone says it's a deep safety draft. You can get a starting safety in the second, maybe even the third round. How much better is Vaccaro than that next group of guys?
I don't know that he is that much better than the next group of guys. I mean, I had him just a shade over Florida's Matt Elam and LSU's Eric Reed. You know, it's kind of like the cornerback position. Once you get past the Milner, everybody, you know, kind of take a flavor kind of a thing.
Right.
That's what I think it's like at safety as well. Matt Elam is the most physical of the two. If Matt Elam was 2 inches taller, he would be the top safety in this draft class.
Wow.
And unfortunately, he's 5'10". And so that's the biggest concern with him. But he was, of the three that I just mentioned, he, Eric Reed, and then, of course, Kenny Vaccaro, he was the best player in the biggest games. And you know, obviously you're playing for a team as talented as Florida, an SEC competition, there's going to be a lot of big games. So I really like his ability. At the same time, he is a little bit stiffer in coverage, and so that's the concern. That's where Kenny Vaccaro is the most impressive in this year's draft class. He is a guy who was often asked to drop down cover slot receivers, certainly has the speed to be able to be that center fielder. You know, in a single high safety look, he is much faster on the field than he worked out at. He is a guy who has spectacular instincts. At the same time, for me, to be an elite safety, to warrant top 10 consideration, like we've seen some safeties in prior draft classes go, you have to have great ball skills. And that's not something that Kenny Vaccaro demonstrated throughout his career. He made a lot of big plays in terms of hits, in terms of breakups, not a lot of big interceptions. And so that's one of my biggest concerns about him. But a very good player who would make a great deal of sense for the Giants at 19 overall or any other club, right around the early 20s is where I think that he could wind up going. And then Eric Reed from LSU might just be the hottest player in the draft at this point. He is a guy that, you know, he fell off the map a little bit this past season because LSU saw Morris Claiborne and Ron Brooks and Brandon Taylor and other safety all wind up getting drafted a year ago. Oh, by the way, they lost Tyrann Mathieu. And so suddenly all the pressure was on Eric Reed to be the superstar, and he didn't make nearly as many plays this past year in 2012 as he did as a sophomore in 2011. And so because of that, he dropped on a lot of people's boards, including my own. But as I watch more tape, as I talk to people, and certainly after his spectacular workout, he is flying up the board. There are some who believe he's going to wind up shocking the world and wind up being the very first safety selected this year. I certainly think he's going to wind up going in the first round.
Are any tight ends a complete tight end in this draft that can both catch and block that's first round worthy in your opinion? Or are we looking at tight ends that are primarily, you know, H-back slot type guys that aren't going to do a whole lot of blocking at the line of scrimmage?
No, there's really not. Tyler Eifert is the closest thing to it, and that's why I expect him to be in the first round. He is a guy that will give you good effort as a blocker. He has improved his strength considerably from his junior to senior season. At the same time, what he does best is go out and get the football. He has the best body control and hands of any tight end in this draft class. They were consistently able to put him out wide, and he was able to make spectacular plays against quality competition. But at the same time, Alabama was able to shut him down, and that is the concern with him, is that as good as he was, he certainly needs some talent around him. So he is a guy that I think is, you know, warrants top 20 consideration, but is not a top 20 lock, as some others have tried to portray him as.
All right, Rob, I'm going to put you on the spot here. Giants up at 19. Give me your prediction. Who do you think they bring home?
You know, I really think that Tank Carradine is an interesting pick for them, just because of the fact that the Giants have the talent that they have at defensive end. Obviously, there's some potential contract situations coming up next year or so. And so, to me, it warrants the gamble on a guy who has a high motor, high upside, athletically speaking. Again, if he had been given a clean bill of health, hadn't suffered the injury in the first place, then there is no doubt in my mind he would be a top-10 prospect in this year's draft class. So at 19 overall, I think that he provides you pretty good value. As long as your medical people feel strongly about that, I have talked with clubs who have given him essentially a clean bill of health, or at least as clean of a bill of health as you possibly can at this stage in his recovery from the surgery. He is expected to start the season on the PUP list, start the preseason on the PUP list, but is also expected to be ready to play in 2013. So in my opinion, I really think that Tank Carradine makes a great deal of sense to the Giants.
And then how about when the Giants pick at 49? Obviously a ton of value in the second round here. Will a guy like, this question comes in from Christian Delgado on Twitter, will a guy like Jonathan Banks or a player of that caliber, of that ilk, would they be available for the Giants at 49? And do you think they can get a potential, maybe not every down starter, but a guy that can play in nickel dime or goal line situations and situations when they pick at 49 in round number 2?
I do believe they can. That's where I think that the value in this year's draft class at cornerback and linebacker sets up well, which is one of the reasons why I would be surprised, frankly, to see the Giants go with a linebacker in the first round, just because I think you're going to see a number of players go in that second round range, whether it be Kasim Green from Rutgers, Arthur Brown from Kansas State. We talked about Kevin Mitzer. So I think those are all players who make a great deal of sense that could be available to them. And then the cornerbacks, as you mentioned, Jonathan Banks, his teammate at Mississippi State, Darius Slay, Robert Alford. I mean, there's a number of cornerbacks who are going to wind up going in the second round who, in some opinions, are every bit as talented as the guys who are going to go around earlier.
Rob, great stuff as always, my friend. Let's catch up after the draft. We'll talk about who the Giants end up with, all right?
Sounds great. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, Rob, great stuff. That's Rob Rang, draft expert for CBS Sports. Does a great job joining us last year and this year. Fantastic work out of him. We thank him very much for joining us this morning. I'll take your calls before you say goodbye. Let's go to Shakes down in Maryland. Shakes, thanks for calling. What's going on? I appreciate you waiting.
No problem. I'm a hardcore Giants fan.
Sure.
Excuse me. But I'm very high on Alec Overton. Very high.
He's an athlete.
I think that without the off-field problems, he would be a top-five pick. Hands down, top-five. I never seen a linebacker like him. And when I started watching football, I watched it from LT. You know, I watched it from 1990 Super Bowl. So, and we haven't had a linebacker like that since, straight up. So I think Alec Overton is the pick. We need to hit that trigger. I even like him over Fluker. And I know everybody's high on Fluker, but I just think that Fluker can't pass protect. I think that his feet work, he needs more work. I wanted to touch on the negatives about Alec Overton that he just talked about where
sure.
He lunged and tackled. All of that, all his negatives, is coachable. And
yeah.
His negatives about off-field, if you put him in a Giant locker room, I think he'll be okay.
Hey, look, the Giants have been willing to take chances on guys with off-the-field problems before. You talk about a guy like Ahmad Bradshaw, a guy like Right. Mario Manningham, a guy like Jaron Hosley, who have had off-the-field problems. And yeah, exactly. And they have turned these guys and made them into productive players. So I don't believe the off-the-field stuff is going to scare the Giants away from Ogletree. If they believe he's the most talented player available on the board, and you heard Rob said he's no question the best athlete of all the linebackers, except for maybe Jarvis Jones, who could be a top 10 pick as well. And I think he will definitely be on the board for the Giants at 19. If they think he's the best available player, I don't think they'll hesitate to take him.
I think so. I want to touch on another thing.
Sure.
Another person that's had off-field problems, but I think he is another just can't miss, and that's Tyrone Mathieu, the Honey Badger.
Mm-hmm.
He's a beast. He's a beast. He can do it all. I really look at him as a Devin Hester type, but better cover skill. I mean, really, I'm high on these two guys. I know they got off-field problems, but with our locker room, I think we can straighten them out. And I also want to ask you a question.
Sure.
Charles Woodson, I'm so flabbergasted that he was cut. We had interest in him, but after we was told rumors that we were interested, there's nothing else that we talked about. Like, we haven't have him in for a meeting. We haven't offered him a contract. I mean, maybe he will play for minimum salary like Jerry Reese likes. So,
well, Charles Woods is not a corner anymore. That's the first thing everyone has to realize. He plays safety now. He doesn't really have the speed to play corner. And yeah, he can't play corner in some sub packages and dime and nickel if you need him to. But at his age, he's really more of a safety now. And can the Giants use a little help with safety?
Can.
Yes, but remember, the Giants right now, what they tried to do this offseason, Shakes, is try to get younger. They don't want to bring in any more older veterans. They want to try to build this team for the future, bring guys in their prime, and not bring in guys that, you know, are 33, 34 years old that they're not sure can last this season. Remember, Charles Woodson has been banged up for many years of the latter part of his career. I'm not sure if he can stay healthy for a whole year.
I think he could. When he came back, he looked healthy as ever. And also, we lost Kenny Phillips, which I was very high on. I prayed that we drafted him years ago. And so I think that he can replace Kenny Phillips, because we need that. I mean, I'm not very sold on Stevie Brown. I think he was just in the right place at the right time all the time last year. He's young, and we still got Will the Thrill, too. So with Charles Woodson mentoring them, I think they can be beasts.
All right, Shakes, thanks for the call, pal.
Okay, thank you.
You have a good one. Good job out of Shakes and Brown. We appreciate him holding. Hold on for almost that entire interview. I'll get the two more calls out of the way before we say goodbye. Appreciate you guys giving us a call. We're going to go to Antonio in Randolph, New Jersey first. Antonio, what's up?
Hey, how are you, man?
What's going on?
Happy Giants spring training season. I feel great, man. I'm sitting here in my house, and I'm looking forward to another football season. I have to tell you, though, I'm watching a few games last year. The team gave up last year, completely gave up. And I think it had to do with just the offense just being out of sync. From what I saw, the running back situation and Wilson coming up late in the season, I think was a great thing. It was a great first-round late draft pick. I have to tell you, man, I've been a Giants fan all my life. I'm sitting here in my last Super Bowl sweatshirt, basically. And I'm pretty much I'm at awe in what's going on in the offseason now, early on in rookie camp. I mean, you hear the Jets fighting. You know, you hear this and that. And, you know, I mean, I don't know what else to say. The secondary and just false starts on the offense was just I couldn't even watch it after a certain point last year. I'd sit in a bar in South Jersey and just get drunk and leave eventually. it was awful. You know, I don't know. I predict this team's going to go at least 7-9. I think they could do better. The way the draft is working out, I don't know, you know, which way everybody falls and you know, who's going to trade up and down and what's going to happen around there. But it's going to be interesting. I think the Giants need to hold on to the players they already have on the field, basically, and look to build depth because guys are going to get hurt during the year.
All right, Antonio. Appreciate the call, pal.
Have a great day.
Hey, good stuff. He was kind of all over the place there, but trying to think of what I can comment on that he said. Well, I'll put it this way. I think the Giants did improve a lot in this offseason, Antonio. So last year, they came short in the playoffs. I think they're going to be a little bit better this year than they were last season. So I think 7-9 is really on the low mark. You know, you never know. It's a tough league, tough division, tough schedule, all that stuff. By the way, the schedule will be released on Thursday night. That should be fun. But the way I take a look at it is that the team's better now than it was last year. And I realize that means they've lost OC and all that stuff. That's fine. Knicks is back healthy. I think JPP is a bounce-back year. Corey Webster hopefully can be healthy this year. And I think the Giants are a little bit better. Let's close out the show with our buddy Dave in Rochester. Dave, what's up?
Hey, John, I think maybe that last call I was drinking already. Maybe he's hitting the sauce in the morning.
Hey, he might be, Dave. I'm not sure.
Holy smokes. Hey, talking about I had a little trivia for you.
Sure.
I wanted to see if you knew about the what was the first playoff game that went into overtime.
I do not.
It's the 58 Giants and Colts.
Oh, the greatest game ever played. That makes sense. I should have known that.
Greatest game ever played. And it's a little ambiance to Pat Summerall, who kicked the winning field goal to get them into that game.
Correct. And we should all point out Pat Summerall, former Giant, obviously great broadcaster. And, you know, really the voice of the NFL for me when I was growing up. And obviously the Giants sends our thoughts, prayers, and condolences to Pat Summerall's family, his friends. And we just remember him as a great Giant, as a great broadcaster, and really everything that's good about the NFL and the National Football League. So very sad day yesterday when we heard of Pat Summerall's passing.
I mean, some awesome games. Him and Madden together, man, those were the best games to watch, the best ones to listen to.
Yeah, and they were a perfect balance, too. You know, Madden had his catchphrases. He was funny. He was gregarious. Summerall was always, you know, that flat line, but in a good way. He would just only say two or three words, but the way he said them was just perfect. And it just, and the two of them together just worked.
He was a smooth dude. But, you know, you're talking about JPP, NFL.com, I know about a month ago, a coach made a comment about JPP's weight from last year.
Yeah.
NFL.com commenting that he's the same weight now as he was last year. I mean, a year in there, do you think that was a factor? I mean, us fans looking at the games, he appears to be the same. Was that part of his performance issues from last year, do you think?
You know, I'm not sure. I mean, it's hard to really figure out a cause and effect with these things. I'm going to sign with Coach Coughlin. You know, if he says he doesn't think JPP was in the best shape he could have been, I'm going to sign with the coach. He knows what he's talking about. And, you know, does JPP walk around as cut and as chiseled as maybe some of the other guys on the team? In my opinion, just using the eye test, probably not, and I think that's probably what Coach is going by too. But then JPP says his body fat percentage was way, way down, and even Coach recognized that it was. So it's hard to tell, but the bottom line is, Dave, whatever the reason, JPP's got to be better this year. He needs to be dominant. He needs to draw attention, and he needs to be the guy that the Giants can rely on that defensive line to get pressure on the quarterback, especially with OC not here anymore.
Well, Tuck's going to say he's stepping up his game. I guess we'll see. But, hey, man, thanks for the call, brother.
Hey, Dave, anytime, man. Appreciate it. Dave in Rochester. And, again, we thank Rob Rang for joining us for the majority of the show. Great stuff. This show will be podcasted. Make sure you check it out on Giants.com. He really went through all the guys that could be there for the Giants in 19. D-line, linebacker, offensive line, secondary, the whole 9 yards. So, great stuff. Check it out, Giants.com. Tomorrow, we'll hear from Jerry Reese and the Giants players for the first time in the offseason. We'll have that on Giants.com. Lance Medel will host. I'll try to pop my head in here if I can around some of the player availabilities. And then it'll be a good time. I'll try to get at least one more draft expert or two on before the draft next week. And, of course, Thursday night the NFL schedule is released. We'll talk about that on Friday morning right here on Giants.com. Everybody, thanks for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow morning.